No. Click on the first slide for me, Alan. Yay. So we started with week one, the open road, beginning our pilgrimage. Whenever you go on any trip, you have to start. You have to start somewhere. And so we thought about that beginning of this journey and where we're going to. Week two, we thought about what are we taking and what are we leaving? Is Ali unpacked her case? Is she unpacked for us the fact that actually you can't take everything with you? You need to think about what you're taking, what you're leaving, what habits are good ones to keep going with, and what are some that we might want to stop? What are the new ones that we might want to take? And then week three, last week, we thought about becoming present, being aware of God at work in us and through us and around us, being present, be mindful, stop, take stock, see what God is doing. And we're moving on to think today about being alone and together. Excuse me. Again, Tim, where do you find these things? That story was just so good. This whole idea of we do this journey alone, but we do it together. We cannot do this life all on our own. We're not meant to. We're meant to be in community. We may have similar experiences. And I was, when we were praying at the beginning, Steve prayed the fact that I've got decades of this journey. And I stopped and I thought, I have really? 45 years. Oh, that makes me really old. But 45 years I've been journeying with Jesus. And some of our stories have overlapped and interwoven and all of that. But my journey is my journey. Your journey is your journey. There is that sense that we walk alone, but we walk together as we're doing it. A few years ago, I have shared this before, God highlighted to me, I'm a fixer. I like to help people. If I see a thing that needs doing, I want to go and sort it. And God highlighted to me that I can't do that for people because I can't walk their journey. They need to walk their journey. What I can do is I can walk with them. I can offer support. I can offer comfort. I can offer challenge. I can walk alongside them, but I mustn't ever try and walk someone else's journey because that's for them to walk. So that's what we're sort of beginning to unpack a little bit today. We're going to look at Luke 24. And it's a story that's very familiar for people. And it's one that we'll probably visit quite a few times as we come up to Easter. It's been a really difficult few days for Jesus and his friends. Jesus has been arrested. He's been tortured. He's been put on trial. He's been crucified. He's now dead. Really difficult. Jesus' friends, they've been left hopeless. They feel, what were we trusting in? They're devastated because they thought this was the one that was going to turn it all around. And we meet two of them on the road away from Jerusalem. So verse 13. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. And they were talking to each other about everything that had happened. And as they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them. But they were kept from recognizing him. So they're chatting away about what has happened. About this sense of, and what next? What's going to happen? We thought it was all planned. They journey together. They share their time with this stranger because they don't know it's Jesus. He's just someone who's on the road, the same as them, and they're walking together. They tell him about what's been going on. Didn't you hear? Haven't you? Where have you been? He then goes to explain to them, using the scriptures, all that had to happen, all that was spoken about Jesus. They keep walking and they get to their destination, and Jesus goes to walk on. And they're like, no, where are you going? Don't, it's getting dark. It's not safe. Come and join us. Come and be with us. Come and share some bread with us. Come and be safe. You know what's been happening. It's not safe out here. So they call him to come in. And when he was at the table with them, he took bread. He gave thanks. He broke it and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened and they recognized him, and he disappeared from them. They asked each other, were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us? A companion is someone who comes and shares bread with us, who shares a meal, who comes and sits at our table. It's from the Latin panis, which is for bread. And these are people with whom we share comfort, support, a meal, and a sense of belonging. There's that connection that can come. Ali's already said, next week we're going to be thinking about these significant women that have journeyed with us. And especially at key points in our lives. But today, let's just think about who has journeyed with us. I look out amongst the people here, and there are many of you who have journeyed with me for a long time. And I'm so grateful. I'm so thankful to God that we have had that opportunity to journey together. And I hope that I have been helpful to you too in those journeys. We especially remember those people who journey with us at key emotional points, those emotional highs of great joys and celebrations, and those lows where we just think we can't go on. We remember those people especially who step in when we're finding it hard. A good traveller will take care of a weary companion. They will recognise when they're maybe losing heart. They take them on as they find them, whatever mess they might feel they're in. They listen to them intelligently, gently, and above all, lovingly. They encourage them to go on and to recover that joy that they had in their journey. And that's what Jesus did to the two on the road to Emmaus. Verse 33 tells us they got up and returned at once to Jerusalem, about 7 miles. And it was probably dark. But they knew they had to get back to that place where their hearts and their hopes and their dreams had been shattered. It was now going to be the place where they would find a renewed companionship for the next leg of their faith journey. God was going to take what seemed to be dreadful and the end, and he was going to turn it around and make something out of it. Jesus spent time alone with the Father, but he also spent time together with his followers. And as I was thinking about this, I thought, do I take that time to spend with God alone? Do I stop? Do I do what Ali was asking us to think about last week? Do I make sure I'm present with God? Lent is a good time to do that, where we can maybe stop some of our routine and just say, I'm going to give you some time, God, and I'm going to listen, and I'm going to wait. And also, do we spend time with each other? We had a lovely time doing crafts yesterday, just sitting round tables and just chatting and finding out a bit about people's lives. On Friday, we had a half day at school because there was a very big funeral wake taking part in the building that we rent. And it was easier for us to all get out the way than get stuck. And I took that opportunity to ask one of my colleagues, could we go for lunch? We see each other every single day. We work alongside each other, but we hardly ever get a chance to talk. So we were able to spend a few hours over lunch just chatting, getting to know each other a bit better. Do we make time in our lives for God? Intentional time where we stop, we switch our phones off or we put them away. We don't sit in a place where we can see the ironing piling up or the washing or what the decorating it needs, whatever. We sit somewhere where we're not going to be distracted and say to God, this is your time. Let me hear you. And do we intentionally spend time with each other? Because we cannot really know what's going on with each other unless we give that time over. There's a well-known African proverb. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And I don't know about you, but when I'm trying to help people do things, there's everything in me wants to just step in and do it. Somebody's trying to do something and you're like, just let me do it. It's part of that I can't do other people's journey that I'm still struggling with because I want to help. It's out of care and compassion and I want to help them. But we never learn because other people are doing. We need to learn ourselves. So I find that a struggle not to step in, to try and help. I told you I'm a fixer. I like to feel like I'm doing something. It's for that person to overcome things. But we can go further together. As Tim's story sort of told us, part of that journey of that man was about being with other people. And it made it easier. He still had to walk it, but it made it easier. We can walk alongside each other. We can encourage each other, but we mustn't try and take over. I heard a story about David Livingston a few weeks ago. Jay John was sharing it, and I've known a bit of David Livingston's story, but this bit really hit me, this idea of journeying together and being a companion, even at a distance. So it challenged me, and it encouraged me. So let me tell you it. Not all of it. We'll be here forever, but just a little bit. So as a teenager, David Livingston was in a little church in Scotland, and a chap called Robert Muffet came to speak, who was a missionary in South Africa. And he came because he wanted to try and encourage others to go with him. And when he walked into this church, he was a bit discouraged because it was like one man and his dog almost. There was a couple of older folks, a couple of women, and unfortunately in the 1800s, women were not allowed to go as missionaries on their own. And that was it. And he thought, oh, what's the point of sharing any of this? Anyway, he told the stories that he wanted to tell. Unbeknown to him, David Livingston was up by the organ because he was the one pumping all the air in. And he was listening to what Robert Moffat said. And there was a phrase that he used that just stirs David. And he said, when I'm in South Africa, I look out and I see the smoke of 1,000 villages and none of them know about Jesus. And that really hit David Livingston. And he decided there and then, I'm going. I want to be a missionary. He went on and studied as a doctor and got all of that sorted, but he kept his word and he went as a missionary, not just to South Africa, but to the whole African continent, really. While he was there, there were tribes around them, and they didn't always like what he was saying. And one tribe in particular took real offense. So they decided that they were going to kill them, because they'd had enough of these people. So they said, we're going to kill this man and his team. They tracked them as they were traveling around. They knew where they were going to be. And word got back to David Livingston that this was the plan of this tribe. So that night, he sits and he writes in his journal. Let me just find it. He said how fearful he was. What's going to happen? How are we going to cope with this? But as he was writing, he then had something rise in him. And then he wrote, "But Jesus said, all power is given unto me in heaven and on earth. And lo, I am with you always, even unto the ends of the earth." And then he wrote next to it, "And this is the word of a gentleman, one who is trustworthy, who will keep his promises. So that's the end of my fear. I feel quiet and calm now." And he closed his journal. It was January the 14th, 1856. The tribe didn't attack that night, as they were expecting. And a little later, this tribe all came to faith in Jesus. And David was asking the chief of the tribe, "Do you remember that night you were going to attack us? We'd heard about it." And the chief says, yeah, I remember. "Well, what happened? Why didn't you attack?" No, we came. We all came. And as we got closer to the camp, we could see warriors standing around your camp. And we counted them. There were 47, and they'd got big swords in their hands. So we left, because we thought, we can't attack these, because we'll be defeated. And David Livingstone was a bit baffled. He's like, "We didn't have any warriors with us. We didn't have anybody surrounding the camp." And just got on with things. A few years later, he comes back on home leave, and he goes to a little church in Scotland, and he decides to share this story. And so he tells the people in the church about what happened on that day, and then what's happened since then. And David had said it was January the 14th that it happened. And one of the men came running up to him after the service, and he had a diary in his hand, and he held it out to him, and he turned to the page of that date. He says, "Is this the date you said?" "Yeah." "Just look." He said, "There were 47 of us praying that night for your protection." It moves me. Isn't it amazing how we can journey, even from a distance? I was saying to Ali beforehand, the 1800s, they didn't have their phones, so they couldn't get messages back and forward. It would be weeks and weeks and weeks before anything would get there. So these people didn't know anything about what was happening, but they just knew they had to pray, and specifically for their protection. Now, we can say that's a coincidence, but God uses these situations to encourage and inspire. Let me find where I am. So even from a distance, we can be companions together. We might not be able to share bread physically, but we can share that journey by telling our stories. And again, Ali has encouraged us to think about how storytelling can actually give us a real insight into each other's lives, and also an encouragement. Your story is part of your journey. And it might feel like, it doesn't really matter. I've not done anything like David Livingstone. I've not done anything special. But you have. Just by saying yes to Jesus, your journey is important. He will take our yes, he will take our ordinary, and he will make something extraordinary out of it. Your prayers, your attention, your petitioning of God will bring about a change that you might never know about until we reach heaven. We are called to accompany each other, to do that companionship, to share together the highs and the lows, to be honest. Sometimes life is tough, and to accept the help when it's needed. The brother-sister song, that one line for me is always a really powerful one. And pray that I will have the grace to let you be my servant too. I'm not good at that. I know I'm not. But I need to learn how to allow people to help me when I need that help. So we don't always know what the company that we give to people. I've told this story before as well, that one day I was at home. I was childminding at the time, so I'd got all these rowdy babies around and all of that. It was just a crazy house. And the door went, and it was one of the church members from here came. And I was like, oh, hello. Come into the madhouse. And they came in, and I made them a cup of tea, and it was just craziness with all the things I needed to be doing. And then they left. And when they went, I was like, oh, I'm so rubbish. I didn't do anything then. They must have come for a reason. They must have really been struggling. And I gave them hardly any attention because I was busy changing nappies and sorting out babies that were getting in the wrong places and all sorts of things. A few years later, I happened to say to this church member, do you remember that day you came to see me? I felt dreadful. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry that I let you down. And they said, no, you didn't. That was exactly what I needed. I just needed to be with someone. I didn't need someone to say anything or do anything. I just needed to be. Sometimes we don't realize what we're giving people. And I often say to the kids at school, maybe a smile and a recognizing people, just a saying, and I see you, will be a massive thing to someone because nobody else has noticed them. And another one of my favorite verses is that idea of don't despise the day of small things. That little thing we can do, God can multiply, magnify, and make it into something that becomes more than it would ever be for me. So don't underestimate the time that you give to people, the attention you give to people, the prayers that you give, those that you re-journey with. We need to learn how to be a companion. So I've got a couple of questions, or three questions, to be thinking about. Can we just have it move on? It's not clicking for me. Last slide. Thank you. So these three questions to think about. Who are those with whom I share my journey? Who am I sharing my journey with now? What am I hearing from their stories? So I need to be listening. That evokes a response in my heart. Sometimes you hear something and you think, I need to, and then there's an action that might come from it. Oh, I hadn't thought about that. Maybe I'll get them, or maybe I'll send them. There might be a reaction that comes. And how can I be a good companion to others, as well as letting others be companions to me? How can we journey together in a way that glorifies Jesus, encourages and builds each other up? So let us consider about how we can spur each other on into acts that are good, into faith that is strong. Our journey together may not always be close, but we are brought together for such a time as this, that God wants to do a great work in us, in our communities, and in our world. So let me pray. Father, help each of us today as we reflect on all that we have heard. Help us to know what you're asking of us today. How can we be good companions to each other? How can we make sure that we spend our time alone with you, so that all that we do is through your strength and your wisdom and your love and your grace. stir us up. Reignite that fire in us if it has gone out, and help us to journey with you to wherever you may take us, knowing that just like David Livingston, your promise is you will be with us even to the end of the earth.